I would second that. Hooray for the riffraff, because I am the riffraff, as are all of y'all out there. Unless you're George Bush or, you know, Donald Trump or something, then welcome to the riffraff. Good morning. It's Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and it's a beautiful day out there. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. The sun is going to be shining down on our fair city here in the lovely region of Cascadia. And this morning we have a very cool show to present to you. I'm Melody Silverwolf.
And I'm Lonnie.
And good morning. And before we dive into this, I've got a couple of exciting announcements. Dun, da, 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 da.
Do tell us, Melody, what's going on?
Well, the fabulous, the one, the only, the unmissable, the irrepressible Anne Weiss is going to be performing tomorrow night at the Mississippi Pizza Pub. If you haven't seen Anne Weiss, she's an awesome folk singer, an awesome guitar player, an awesome songwriter. You just have to go. Tomorrow night at Mississippi Pizza Pub, that's it, 3552 North Mississippi. It's an early show, 6 to 8. Gotta like that. Some of us don't like staying up until 1 o'clock just to, like, wait for the music to start. And the opener and special guest is going to be Jeremy Serwer. And if you haven't seen Anne, you just got to go. That's all I can say. It's a sliding scale. You should go. Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi, be there or be square. And then the second announcement leads us right into our show. Tonight, a people power party, kind of like that, and a volunteer orientation for City Repairs Village Building Convergence. Yes, indeed, it's that time of year again. Time to get out there and converge, baby. Tonight is this party, and it is at the City Repair Headquarters. And
look, there's
thank
something
you so
being
much.
Placed in front of
it's
you now.
It's not really tiny that I can't read. And it's at 2122 Southeast Division. It starts at 6. And, you know, it's going to be fun. And if you're interested in being a volunteer, and that's a really good thing, and there's so many things that need to be done, show up.
Well, and there is so much to talk about when
yes,
it comes to the Village Building Convergence. Hence,
good
morning, everyone that's joined
good morning.
Us in the studio. So we have with us this morning Jenny Leese. We have Elliot, and we have Eveline. And, well, I know that Jenny has written a book around... I know this. See,
because
Jenny
she
and
knows
I, we
everything.
Go way back.
Ani has one of those magic mirrors like Miss Whoever It Was on Romper Room, and she can see everything.
I have followed Jenny's illustrious career for some years now. But Eveline, Elliot... I know that you are also coordinating or helping to really hold together some key parts of this year's Village Building Convergence. And I want to back up four steps for listeners that don't know what the heck Village Building Convergence is. And I was wondering who amongst us, say you, for example, Eveline, who would like to go ahead and just explain a little bit about, oh, say, the next, couple weeks here in Portland and what that hopes to accomplish in the long term.
Okay, well, I would love to explain the Village Building Convergence. It's definitely a very integral part of my life, so day in and day out, I live and breathe it. So basically, since January, people have been coming from the communities to express interest in becoming a site. So that process has been going on for about the last 5 months, and we've been meeting with these people on a weekly basis and trying to help them along the process and getting what they need in their community and teaching them how to make their site come alive. So this next couple weeks is going to really be exciting because the sites are going to come to fruition. And it's really interesting because the amount of sites you actually think that they're not going to happen. Part of you thinks they're not going to happen because it's such a process. And these people in the communities also have never done a lot of this kind of work before, where they've actually gone out and taken that step to communicate with their neighbors in a way that they never have before. So this is really coming out of their comfort zone. And a lot of people do have some of the supportive network already existing, like such as a school or... let's see, it could be like a business that's wanting to reach out to a community that's already there. Mm-hmm. But even then, it's still really extending yourself into doing something that's new. So this whole 5 months has been a part of that process that we've had with them as well as facilitators. So this week is really the wrap-up in terms of getting the materials together. We do a really large push where we try to get all the materials donated from Rebuilding Center. So that order is going in. It's a very, very large order. This is the most sites that we've ever had in 1 year. So we're really trying to keep up with that pace. And it's a pretty exciting process to see everybody running around trying to get that last-minute detail in the place that it needs to go.
Uh-huh. For sure. I was hoping you could explain what a site is. I mean,
sure.
So there's a lot of sites. We have them all over the place, and they're going to be built with a lot of donated materials. What is a site?
Yeah, what are people building?
Okay, so what a site is basically a community member or a leader who wants to create a gathering place in their community that's underused. And that underused space can be anything from an intersection. It can be somebody giving away the front of their property to the community. There's public spaces, there's private spaces, and there's also existing communities, so there's school spaces. We do the whole myriad of that spectrum. We really encourage people to reclaim the public space as their own. We really encourage painting of intersections. We actually have an ordinance through the city that allows us to do that now. So we have a really great working relationship with the city and the Portland Department of Transportation so that we can get people out in the streets painting their intersection. And when you paint together, that process of design is not ever imposed on the community. They actually are part of that design process. So that's one example. Another example is building the kiosk to get that information out to the community so that they know that they can be a part of the process. And I think what we're trying to offer people is that they can be a part of something directly instead of waiting around for somebody else in another bureau or the city to tell them that it's okay to do something there, or that they're going to tell them that that's what is allowed there. But we're doing it from this grassroots area where we are part of our landscape, and we're saying that I am noticing these patterns and that I see that something could be used here. I see that people are walking down my street all the time and they have no place to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And this big picture is that it's a hands-on component that anybody can be a part of. And it doesn't matter whether you're educated about city planning, doesn't matter whether you have ever done that before in your life. It's that you start to connect to people and have conversations about what is possible. And that's the main component of the Village Building Convergence.
And do you have to live in the city of Portland to do this?
You don't have to do that. And that is a beautiful thing because it's really exciting this year because we have three sites that are outside of the Portland metro area. And we're trying to have it so that the Village Building Convergence happens year-round. And I think that this year, because there are sites that have asked from other cities, that we're going to be able to start doing that. And there's going to be a site, there actually is a site in New Orleans, and we're very excited about that because one of our core volunteers, Ben D'Antoni, has gone down with Common Ground Collective to do some mobile kiosks there to help people with the reconstruction efforts. And we're really excited to have him come back because they actually did it before the Village Building Convergence cycle, which is the 10 days of May 19th to the 28th. So when he gets back, we're really going to be really encouraging him to let the community know what has happened down there and other options that are available for new projects like that. We also have an intersection repair in Roseburg.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be helping them get an ordinance passed as well and see how that goes right downtown in Roseburg. And the beautiful thing about this is that we, as much outreach as we do, it's really about people coming to us and asking us for that facilitation. That way, it's always in their hands, and they don't feel like we are pushing anything, that we will just help them along in that process.
So City Repair and the Village Building Convergence Project section of City Repair acts more as a facilitator for community needs.
Absolutely. Because people notice, they start to walk around in their communities and they see these structures, which could be like a cob bench, it could be a trellis, and they're wondering where those came from.
Right.
And they start to ask those questions. And when they start asking those questions, they're opening themselves up for possibilities to speak with other people just walking down the street. And that is such a powerful thing because otherwise you're just walking down the street because you're looking around your environment, but you really want to share that with someone. And when you start sharing is when you start to have ideas about what's possible.
And connecting with, well, other people in your community, mm-hmm. fighting alienation and all that kind of good stuff.
Absolutely.
Right on. Jenny, yeah. You want to say something?
I think that that's actually the really key point, is that it's these projects are all about the neighborhoods and the community members doing things for themselves. And City Repair just serves to facilitate the process and coordinate the citywide effort. But really, each of these sites is a group of either school community or neighborhoods that have come together and have identified their own sense of place and their own identity and issues or you know, aspects that they want to improve in their own community life, whether it's a place to share information like a bulletin board or a place to sit and talk and get to know each other. It's really about them figuring out for themselves what they want, and then City Repair just helps to bring all of these different pieces together and helps coordinate the effort and kind of make it a real buzz. And over the past 6 years, the Village Building Convergence really has become a phenomenon, that this is, people know that it's May, and at the end of May is the VBC, and that's the time to get out in the streets and work with your community members, and that's why every year there are more and more sites, and who knows how many people out there are using this as the time to have block parties or neighborhood potlucks, because it's kind of riding on the energy that this is community building time.
Absolutely. It's a phenomenon that has truly spread. I want maybe if you could just sort of give us an overview of the last 6 years of how it's grown and what you were doing 6 years ago and what you're doing now.
It's pretty phenomenal. 6 years ago, the first convergence that we consider was really one project, and it was the first natural building structure built in the city of Portland. It was a sanctuary space for right near the first intersection repair at Sherritt Square. And it was a 10-day event where people came and together learned about the power of physically building together and using that as a way to actually build relationships and conversations and, you know, address kind of deeper issues of the neighborhood. So that was the first year. The next year was the Natural Building Convergence, which was the first, you know, kind of 10-day phenomenon that had speakers every night, and we call them the Cobb stars from around the country came. The people that are the natural building leaders and teachers of this country came together and shared their wisdom, and really that set off, I think, a nationwide experience of bringing natural building into the city. And through the Natural Building Convergence, we worked with the city of Portland, with the Department of Transportation, to do these things legally in the public right-of-way, which is pretty phenomenal. The next year, the Natural Building Convergence emerged into the Village Building Convergence because it developed into more of kind of broader community building with the idea of the intersection repair projects. And intersection repairs are those painted intersections that you see around town near Belmont and 33rd and Yamhill and down in Sherritt Square in Selwood and various other places. Intersection repairs are the physical manifestation of a neighborhood coming together and actually transforming their intersection physically by painting the streets, by building things on the street corners. And so the Village Building Convergence that year, what was that, 2003. That year was a lot of natural building, but also a lot of different forms of community building. And then each year since then, it's grown. People, we've learned a lot about how to do these processes. We've had a lot of different kinds of speakers. The evening events have evolved now. Elliot can tell y'all a little bit about this year. We have a whole variety of speakers and experiences each night, music and different things. So every year it's really, we're learning and growing and deepening, and it's just becoming a pretty solid piece of this city's, you know, year-round celebration of community.
So I wanted to, before we open it up to callers, which I'm hoping to do soon, I'm hoping to talk to Elliot. And that's another part of this, the 10-day focus at the end. Well, I don't want to say the end, because as Jenny's saying, it is becoming more of a year-round cycle. We've heard that a couple times this morning. But here we are towards the end of May, and there's this culmination point, both in work parties, workshops, and evening speakers with music. And Elliot, I understand that's the part that you're focused on this year. Can you talk to us this morning about the different folks that are coming to town, where that's happening, how people can get involved and go, and all that stuff.
Yeah, thanks. Well, let's see. You know, so like in the daytime part of the village building conversions, we're literally building this village. And it seems like what happens at the night is our time to really feel what it's like to live in the village, to come together and share a meal, eat together as a village, and play together and celebrate being together in this way. So so the nighttime events sort of are like our demonstration of what does it really look like for us to live in a village, like as if we're already there.
We are.
Sounds exciting. Well, I have a question. You know, I used to live in the village, heavy air quotes here, in the neighborhood, so to speak, right near Kebu. And now I live out in the vast wasteland, almost out to Gresham, where there's just, you know, like street after street after street of nice little suburban houses. And, you know, people smile at each other, but, you know, there's no real community. And it's just kind of, so, you know, like, how do you recommend that people who live in neighborhoods like that start trying to incorporate a different value? I mean, it's not like the neighbors don't know each other or aren't nice to each other, but there's no real desire to socialize among most of the people in the neighborhood that I live in. Like, how do you address something like that when you live in a neighborhood like that? Where do you start?
You know, the spark of life is everywhere, even in Gresham.
I don't actually live in Gresham, but I live out far that direction.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it's a pleasant neighborhood, but, you know, it's just kind of people are like, oh, yeah, got to go watch Deal or No Deal. Sorry, see you later. You know, that kind of thing.
I think you'll be really surprised. I think a lot of us, especially with all the increased craziness happening around us, we really crave a sense of community and crave a sense of place and neighborhood. And we look around and suddenly realize, wait a minute, I'm surrounded by these people every day. Who are they? And even though I think they're, whether it's by form or function, that we feel kind of a sense of isolation in our neighborhoods. People, it takes something to walk through that isolation. So it takes somebody walking outside and just going next door and knocking on the door and saying hi. I mean, it's so simple, but what a radical act to actually walk through that barrier. Because you quickly realize there aren't barriers, and people are really kind of fundamentally want similar things. They want a safe neighborhood. They want a beautiful place to be. They want a sense that if something happens, they know who's around them. And then you start to realize that it's more than just emergency circumstances that will make you want to know your neighborhood, your neighbors, that you realize, oh, there's a caregiver three houses down, and, you know, my grandmother needs some help, or there's a plumber, and there's a carpenter three blocks away, and then you connect those people, and you know, you just start these conversations. It all begins with someone being a spark, whether it's setting up a bulletin board in your front yard that says, who are you? Who lives in this neighborhood? Or who has dogs in the neighborhood? Or stuff like that. Or someone just sitting on your front porch with tea and inviting people up to chat.
And I think that there's a really huge impetus to do this now more than ever, as we've had some really stark lessons in this last year through Katrina, through looking at systems that are supposed to protect and help people through absolutely fail. And I'm really excited to see that as one of the speakers, you are bringing in Malik Rahim. And it was mentioned earlier, the Common Ground Collective in New Orleans looking at community building and how a VBCer has gone to New Orleans to sort of also add that spark to what's going on in community building there now, or rebuilding, I should say. And it seems like this is really a good opportunity to talk to our neighbors and say, hey, you know, we do need each other. There's no more fooling around. We have to count on each other because we really can't count on anyone else. And just seems like we might want to underscore that a couple of times. You know, not so much to say, oh, yeah, go to your neighbors out of desperation. But, look, we live in uncertain times. There's the idea of natural disasters. I mean, heck, we live on, you know, this fault line and earthquake zones and stuff like that. We also live in a curious, you know, economic and political time. And you're also having some speakers addressing peak oil, I noticed, which is an interesting thing. And just the whole idea of localizing at a community level for needs and for that social web that we really require as social species.
Exactly. Yeah, each evening actually focuses on a different important part of what does it look like to live in the village. So so like you mentioned, the first night Malik Rahim is coming, and this is our night to really see what is it like to just really take it on and live in a city that was literally destroyed, and just with this super heroic attitude say, I'm here to help and to rebuild the city. Or the second night, we're focusing on looking at how there's ancient wisdoms that teach us to be reconnected with the spirit of excitement and enthusiasm of what does it really take to live in a village, and looking at ancient stories and new stories of the amazing new myth of saving the farm.
I like it. Well, hey, I want to let everybody who's listening know that it is 8 o'clock in the morning, my friends. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, Albany, 91.9 FM in the Gorge. And this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and we have many guests this morning. We're joined by Evelyn and Elliot and Jenny from the Village Building Convergence, a very exciting thing that happens here every year in Portland. And we're very fortunate to live in a place where such a vibrant project has gotten off the ground and taken root and is now blossoming and growing like a giant vine every
like
year.
Like a giant growing thing.
Yes. growing up through the city, and, you know, bursting forth with its flowers up to the sun. So you can be a part of it. All you got to do is just come on down to one of their many, many events. You can get involved as a volunteer. You can come to the music and speakers. What a great thing.
Let me throw out a phone number here if you'd like to get involved this morning by conversing with us on air, 503-231-8187. Call in with your questions about placemaking. Why is this important? How does it all tie into the rest of the world? And, you know, maybe you yourself have an idea, a vision for community making, for placemaking, for reclaiming the public square, the public space. And thoughts on alienation, because really, I think more than any other factor, alienation holds back the potential of truly recreating a new way of being with each other.
Well, and I have a related question on a related topic. It seems to me that alienation fits right into this, what she was just saying. How does, if at all, how does traffic calming fit in with what the Village Building Convergence is doing, and are y'all working on that at all?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the reasons that some people actually find themselves thinking about intersection repair, and it's actually something we're working with the Department of Transportation to offer this as an idea. Instead of paying $40,000 for a speed bump or a traffic circle, you can, you know, spend $20 and, you know, buy food for a potluck and come up with really creative solutions among the neighborhood. I think the essence of traffic calming is making the street more interesting. If you have a landscape that's changing, or where you know that there's people there, it's going to slow drivers down. Our public right-of-way and our transit corridors, our streets, especially our neighborhood streets, the quiet ones, those are shared public space. That is for pedestrians, for cyclists, and for cars. And for whatever other way of being out there and moving from place to place, or just being in, you know, that's really our only place to share in our neighborhoods. That's the public right of way. So the traffic calming aspect of these projects is that you have people out there, first of all, more by hanging out in the street corners and doing different activities there. Painting the street intersection is a really phenomenal way to get people to come to a complete stop where there's no stop sign. And we've seen that at every single intersection that gets painted. Cars, you know, it's just something different. And you know that this is not just a typical street to speed through. You know that something is happening, that a community's taken ownership. It feels good. You want to stop and slow down and take it in a little bit as you move through that neighborhood. And so it's a really creative, simple, and cheap way that feels good, that's beautiful. It does so many things at once. It's a really great way to help us learn that streets aren't just for cars.
Excellent. And, you know, having helped repaint Sherritt Square one time, I really wish that the people who made street paint, you know, that you paint the yellow lines with, would make it in different colors, because the paint that you use on this. It doesn't last, you know, and then it's so sad to see this beautiful work of art fade right away, you know.
Well, that's actually part of it. We figured out how to make lots of different colors out of it, so we figured out the color blending. You can do anything. Charette Square has gotten more and more colorful every year. But one of the important aspects of painting is that it does fade away after a year. And so
you have to do it again.
You have to do it again. Mm-hmm. And we like that because then you have another block party and another chance. I mean, really, I believe.
And it becomes organic. You know, I mean, it's like it can become maybe a little bit changed.
Yep, every year.
You know, every year it changes just a little bit depending on the people painting it.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah.
It would necessarily just because you're repainting this freehand. It seems like that you could add a project every
potential.
Year, and you could intersection could become this incredible. Like
and
nobody would ever go in their house.
Yeah, yeah.
And they do.
And they do.
And I've seen a few.
Yeah.
I used to live down the block for one.
So I wanted to remind you, folks, if you'd like to call in, 503-231-8187. We have the whole Village Building Convergence crew here to answer your questions. And, you know, tell us a little bit about some of the projects that are going to happen this year that people are planning on
constructing. Like, especially the one I'm really totally excited about on 72nd and Woodstock. Tell me about that.
Okay, I can
see. And how can I get involved?
Let's see. So what's great about that site is that when you look at it from an aerial view, it's at 72nd and Southeast Woodstock. It seems like a really unlikely place to reclaim as a public gathering space. And before anything started there, it just looks like a big, barren triangle with nothing in it. And the reason it looks like that is because that is what it was.
I know that intersection. So it just cries out for something.
Yeah, and to be honest, how people decided that that was going to be a space is really surprising to me. So they were really courageous and brave to even be able to cross those streets to get over there and to have that attention to do so. So I would just like to thank them for doing that. And so they are in their second year, so they're such a great example of what can happen when your project takes on an element of being beyond just a completion date of 1 year. Because I think a lot of people in the communities, or some criticism that we've had as sites, is that, you know, the project looks incomplete. And I would just like to say that for people who do say that, this is a great opportunity for them to get involved because they're noticing. And when you notice, there's this unique choice in front of you to become involved. And we really encourage those types of people and those kinds of feedback processes to jump in and to let us know what they're seeing, because this is when the site changes, and it changes for the better because people are, like I say, are observing. But when you really interact with that environment is when it begins to change and grow with you. And that site has really taken on a really interesting evolvement, because now they're building like canopies over their benches. And these canopies are going to be providing shade. And so the second stage is like, well, you don't build the canopies before you build the benches, typically. So it's just kind of like interesting to see how it's raising up. And they're like adding some photovoltaic panels in order to provide lighting there. And there's a lot of opportunities for kids to become involved. They're really, really encouraging that this year. And it's just becoming a beautiful site in the second stage of this process. And they're very excited about having community gatherings there year-round, and I would encourage anybody to go down there and check it out. 72nd and Woodstock.
I'm really pleased to see that 90th or 92nd and Burnside is going to happen, because there's a sort of a little, just a grassy thing there that just sits there, and I drive by it frequently.
And when there's just a little
cries out for something.
I was going to say, when there's just a little grassy thing there, you know, that's usually where you really want to go, hey, there's some space now that we can make into a place.
And this site is really interesting because it's not just a little grassy space.
It's fairly long, yeah.
It's quite large, and I'm really excited about this project to see what's going to happen. I've taken it on as more of the energy that I'm going to put into a project over the next couple of years, because it's very much classic city repair in terms that we're willing to take on more interdepartmental communication on behalf of the community as facilitators. So what we did was the community came forward and let us know that they've noticed this two block long grass strip on Burnside and 90th that was completely underused. And not only was it underused, it was also being misused because of that. And these neighbors are living right across the street from this grass and are not able to do anything there because the Bureau of Maintenance comes through and just all they do is come through and mow it. And they don't ask the neighbors what would be a great use of this space. It's just not the way that that bureau operates. That's mm-hmm. not their function, and it's not a criticism. It's simply just the way that it is.
We
right
don't
now.
Ask, we mow. Yes.
Exactly. And they will mow anything in yes. a way. So exactly. anytime trees have been planted there, they've just kind of been mowed over. So this is what, you know, we're dealing with, and it's somewhat humorous, but at the same time, you know, we have to really step up and say we don't want that to happen anymore. So what we did was we wrote a grant to the Bureau of Environmental Services through the City of Portland to manage the water issues there. So when we started observing the site, especially through the neighbor's eyes, we began to notice that there was water grading down that two-block strip and gathering in large pools in front of people's houses. So what the neighbors did was they cut channels down through this ivy in order to make the water go back through the storm drains. And that still is just a reactionary measure. Clearly, there's like a problem with the way it was engineered in the first place. So let's deal with it in a way that we can actually step forward and do something about it mm-hmm. as a community, because we're the ones that are there.
Maybe you could make a pond.
We could make a pond, but actually what we're hoping to do is build a lot of bioswales and cut the curbs. When you cut the curbs, the water will filter into the grassy area, and then we're going to try to filter the water before it gets put back into the water table below.
Can you talk about what a bioswale is for people that aren't familiar?
Yeah, what a bioswale is something that catches the water as it goes down the grade. It's basically a large trench. And when that happens, the water catches there, and you can plant certain types of plants in order to filter it. Because this water is coming off the street, clearly it's not something that you want to use in garden beds. So the community did want to put garden beds there, but we would be using those bioswales to catch the water so that it would not be pooling at the end of the block, which I think is going to make a lot of neighbors happy, and they're really excited.
And then are you going to use that water in the gardens? Get it to the, or is it, it's going to be different water?
It's going to be different water, and yes. water is such an issue for these kind of projects, these permaculture projects that are trying to address food-based systems that people can be integrally a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, we would not be using that water for that. So this year, why we wrote that grant is to get help through the Community Stewardship Watershed Program in order to get people to understand that water is everywhere and
yes.
to start monitoring what is happening in their own environment. So it's really exciting for City Repair this year to be able to be engaged in this kind of project, especially with Bureau of Environmental Services, because we're trying to see if we can start signing that property over from the Bureau of Maintenance so we're allowed to build structures there. So this part of this design is to have a kiosk up, to maybe build an outdoor structure, to have a bus stop that goes through with paths. It's so exciting to see what is possible with such a large piece of land.
And are you really going to put a food garden there so close to such a busy street? Wouldn't that be a concern with, like, you know, the lead, or not the lead, but, you know, the rubber from people's cars?
And, well, there's a sidewalk in between it, and it's kind of up the hill a little bit, and there are actually trees in between there. And people garden in front of their yards all the time.
All the time,
yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of traffic on that one street. But I think if you have a barrier, that would probably be good.
Well, and it's various. So, first of all, let me give that phone number again. 503-231-8187, 231-8187, if you're interested in joining the conversation.
It's amazing how quiet it is this morning.
Yeah, it's okay. People are sleepy. It's okay. They'll call.
They're busy coming up, you know, making these projects.
Right,
While we're giving up phone numbers, let's give out the info for City Repair, shall we? It's cityrepair.org. Or 503.
That's not a phone number.
Contact info.
Don't use your telephone for that.
Cityrepair.org or 503-235-8946. And all the evening events that are starting on May 19th and going through May 27th are going to be at 230 East Burnside. So, and there's going to be a dinner, a talk, and music or entertainment every night. And, you know, so we pretty much have your social schedule.
And there's stuff every day. So I want to talk a little bit about the stuff every day. We haven't really, obviously a whole lot of knowledge involved in what happens during the convergence. People actually know how to make the cob structures, how to mix cob. People actually know what bioswales are. People actually know about permaculture and about what plants to plant to break down, say, petrochemicals in soil. People know these things, and you're having workshops about them at certain points during the day. And when do those workshops start? How can people find out more about what those workshops are? And again, How can people really access this stuff? What are the fees? Where are things located? That kind of stuff, the logistics.
Okay, yeah, I would love to talk about that. Well, I'd like to differentiate, just for clarity's sake, that there are two different types of workshops that happen during the day. So there's on-site workshops, which we don't necessarily term as workshops because people are working. And they're able to...
Work parties with a learning focus?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And which really creates an environment more than just sitting there retaining information.
For sure.
So we bring in natural builders from all over the country, and they come back every year because they just love doing this. And they teach people how to build COP. For example, that is one example. Also how to build other things, other natural, using other natural materials. So that's an educational component that's happening there. There's also, you can learn how to do mosaic work. You can, it's very artistic structures as well. We have a lot of art involved this year, which is really exciting, especially in the public right-of-way.
Right.
So that's another option. And we feed everybody every day, and it goes from about 9 to 5. You can show up at any site that you want to. It's totally free will site movement here. There's no assignment, anything like that. And it's free. And I think that that is just such a great thing that it's free. You can just move around as much as you want to.
And okay, so that's really good. So that's one kind of workshop. We have callers. I'd like to actually have somebody else, and then we can talk about the other kind of workshop
yes,
too.
Yes, sure.
So let's go ahead and take a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Is that me?
It's you.
Hi. This is Terry Treat, and I'd like to say good morning to everybody.
Good morning, hi. Terry.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I love the Convergence. It's a really amazing gathering. I went to the first one, and it made my heart so happy just to have us all come together and look at all the alternatives that are really coming into big focus before more people know about it. And I have the Women's Temple on Burnside and 31st has a really great relationship with the Convergence and City Repair. And we have what's called the Heart of the Tea House, which was one of the very first things that Mark Lakeman made. It was a tea house made out of recycled buildings. And we've had it on the property for about 10 years, and part of the Convergence is we are rebuilding it. And it's very exciting. We're going to put a living roof on it, and the whole community is coming together. And part of that is happening this Saturday. There's a ground breaking where we're building the foundation for it. And I'm kind of on the outside. I don't know very much about that, but it's a really exciting part of the Women's Temple to be in community access for all the community and to kind of build together this this tea house. It's kind of like the heart, we called it the heart of the community.
That's sweet. That's awesome.
Excellent. So that's happening tomorrow?
That's happening on Saturday. Yeah, tomorrow. And then it's groundbreaking, and that's at 3125 East Burnside. And I think it's from 12 to 4.
And now you mentioned this is a women's temple, so mm-hmm. are only women invited to help or are men invited as well?
It's the whole community is open. It's the land, the community space on the outside is open for the community to come and build and do it together. So men and women.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks very much, Terry.
All right, y'all. Have a good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
So it seems like this is a perfect time to mention recognizing the connection between the Village Building Convergence and Love of the Goddess is a perfect time to mention the fact that Starhawk's going to be mm-hmm. at the Village Building Convergence for several days and is going to be presenting on Thursday, May 25th.
And Starhawk has been at several, or at least
yes.
one other village building. It seems like maybe two. I don't know. I could be imagining things.
One officially.
Okay.
Yeah, she's focusing a lot on permaculture and its relationship to, you know, all the political work that she does in these days. And I think that's a really interesting
the political work,
interesting and valuable
path.
Turn, yes, into her focus, because I think it's a very important one. I mean, political work depends on having a sustainable planet, obviously, to continue doing our work.
And really, earth-based spirituality.
Yes.
Really, if you're spirituality is earth-based, then you're going to be taking care of your nest, right?
One hopes so.
And your community is a huge part of that, and permaculture is a huge part of that. And so, you know, all of our wonderful witchly inclined friends, this is a really good time to, like, get your practicum experience, right? Like, this is beyond coming together at the full of the moon and experiencing a good increase of energy and manifesting what you want. Put it into action and actually get your hands in some clay and see what you can do with permaculture over the next couple of weeks.
Well, and
it grounds the theory in experience.
Even if you're one of those people who is, you know, physically unable to do any, you know, physical work of that sort, I'm sure that the folks at the site could find something good and helpful for you to do. Everybody could contribute something.
I have to say, I've been a part of the convergence on the periphery for years, and there, I don't think that there's anyone that is physically unable to participate, because the type of work that it takes to actually build a site is so widely varied, from helping to plan the potluck to stomping the cob. It is all
to stirring the paint, sweeping the street, whatever.
It is all, you know, equally important to sitting and placing pieces of tile in a mosaic. It is all, you know, really of equal value, because with any of those pieces gone, you know, no food, unhappy workers.
That's,
you know,
for sure.
So it's one of those very all connected, all valued things.
Well, let's take another caller. Caller, you are on the air. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, yes. Your work and energy sounds wonderful. And I live in a housing situation that I can't get out of. It's like living we're living in housing authority buildings. There's a lot of unhealthy socialization and bad gossiping. And we're scrutinized by a lot of systems, and we wouldn't choose to, probably a lot of us, to live with or near each other. I am imagining that this work and this energy cannot be applied or used in living situations like this. So I will listen to the voices. Bye.
Bye.
I mean, it seems like there must be a way to make that happen.
Let's ask our guests, and then I have an idea.
Well, again, I think that everybody really values a beautiful, friendly place to be.
Yeah.
And even if you feel like you may not want to know each other really intimately, I bet you'd all appreciate knowing what's happening around you. So having a nice place to share information, bulletin board, where if someone lost a dog or if something big is happening or they're, you know, having a book sale next week or something, you know, I think everyone likes to know and share information, one thing, and to beautify and even have places to, I wonder if there's, you know, out in the sidewalk or something, if there's a tree that's out there that maybe you want to have a bench to sit under in the summer, to sit in the shade. And so maybe it's, maybe for your situation, you might want to start with kind of more physical things, changes, you know, to beautify or connect. And then who knows, maybe from there you'll start talking and realize that you do share some other, you know, commonalities with the people you live around, and go from there. There's a lot of different ways to approach these projects.
It seems like just a few residents could make a planter with flowers.
That's
or something.
Exactly
anything.
What I was thinking. I know of folks in a couple of senior housing authority buildings who are looking into ways of creating a community garden space, mm-hmm. who are looking at how to container garden, to pull people together and to try to create community from, as the caller very astutely said, from folks that wouldn't necessarily choose to live next to each other, but here they are, you know, in an economic condition that the city says, here, you're all in this building. Mm-hmm. It's like a grouping of people absolutely without community. What can you do to actually create some community for the people that have been thrown together?
Well, yeah. And I think, isn't every neighborhood like that? You don't necessarily choose to live next to these.
But
just
many,
like, you see this house, you like to live there, so you move in,
but
and
I believe
there
the,
you are.
But I believe the point would be that people, folks have more agency as to whether they're going to stick it out with the neighbors that they're not talking with.
I hear you.
And I bet that the people who work in the housing authority, just like the people who work in our city departments, would really appreciate that the residents of these buildings come together and have more of a sense of ownership and take care of the place and keep it cleaner, or, you know, resolve issues that come up on their own. Like if someone's being really noisy, then maybe there's an infrastructure where the community members, you know, the residents themselves can work things out. And I think that's the reason why the city of Portland really loves these projects, is because it's an experience where a neighborhood has come together and is taking ownership and responsibility and taking care of their own place.
To become a community.
Yeah.
Yes, that's very true.
Good morning to our next caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was hoping to share a bit of praise and also some constructive feedback. My first experience with the Village Building Convergence was last year, and it was I had an incredible time. It was literally 1 week into Portland. I had just arrived. My partner and I were young natural builders, and when we heard about the Village Building Convergence, it was just a very exciting thing for us in one way, because it was a chance to really go out there and see the community of community developers, really get a chance to connect with other natural builders, and at the same time experience some of these great teachers that would come out to do natural building, and more importantly, how natural building was being used publicly, out in the open, you know, not hiding it out in the backwoods, trying to build a small cob cottage or things like this, but really trying to build it in the public perspective. And so I give kudos to everyone who's been involved with the Village Building Convergence. I know it can be a nightmare trying to, a joyous nightmare, but a nightmare nonetheless, trying to get facilitation of all these ideas and perspectives and egos and all this kind of good stuff. So I really
to community.
Give it. Yeah, exactly. It's what really makes it worthwhile. And at the same time, I think there's the reason why, specifically the reason I was calling was to say that, but also to kind of recognize how difficult it is to develop community, and to, again, say thank you for kind of putting up with the diversity of Portland and how you're working with it. My constructive feedback would be this. Last year, there was a great site. It was the Portland State University. There was a group of students who organized a living roof and cob oven project. And they had two really great teachers. I think it was Bernhard Masterson and Kiko Denzer, who are known for their natural building ability. And the feedback comes in this way, is that somewhere along the lines, there was something that was lost at what I believe to be a very important site. One, because it's so public. Two, because it's working with such a bureaucracy or an institution within the city of Portland. And what was lost sight of was making sure that the interests of the community, specifically in this case was the students of Portland University, are that their vision was carried throughout the project. But there was a lot of miscommunication, and I felt that the role of city repair could have been slightly different, which was to take on that facilitation role that they're really good at doing, and to try to sort of bridge the gap between conflicts that occur sometimes between really good teachers and the vision of a community. And so I'd like to hear a little bit of how Village Building Convergence is going to sort of problem solve and conflict and do conflict resolution around these things, because in the end I think what's important is the byproducts of a bench or an oven or, you know, of a space that's created with the community. And I know that this is it's going to be such a large endeavor this year. It's like you said, it's you've never had these many projects. So I'm curious to hear how you're going to troubleshoot that, and I want the public to hear more about it, because I want them to be supportive of your process and really help out when those kind of things arise, so that we have a much more successful Village Building Convergence this year. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, well, I would like to thank the caller for definitely pointing out this site, because it is definitely something that all of us in the core organization have, in terms of VBC, have spoke about. And it was challenging for us with that site and the communication and the leadership. And it's interesting because I feel as if that space was really asking for more than maybe some of us were willing to either, A, give or listen to and receive. Because it's not just us that are asking, as people that are asking for something to change. It's also that environment. And the environment at Portland State University is, wow, it's such an institution. And I think that for all of us, we're really not always combating, but trying to integrate ourselves as individuals, trying to move forward with change, at the same time working within that system as well. And Portland State University is such a great example of us trying to integrate. And I think what happened there, from my own observations and from my interaction with others in leadership positions, is that there was a very firm desire to have that site go a certain way. And before the Natural Builders got there, that leadership was very strong. So when the Natural Builders arrived, that communication was just, it was combative a little bit. And
not, there was sort of already a vision in place, and they were, sort of maybe a little challenging of it, maybe.
Yeah, and this is when the site starts to come into a space where it's going to evolve into something different. And I think that something that City Repair could have done better is to go down there and really monitor and try to take that physical presence and be present as much as possible. We really did do all that we could to facilitate and mediate that process. And I know a lot of people at Portland State University extended themselves to do that as well. And it's really important, I feel like, for people to be flexible and to be malleable, because that environment is wanting you to shape it. If it's asking you to shape it, then you have to listen to the changes that are going to come. And that when people get involved, they also have an interest in seeing that it moves forward as well. And when we attach ourselves too much to an outcome, it becomes combative. And this is a really great lesson for us that not all sites are ready to move forward at the same way that we want them to.
Right.
And I think for City Repair, for us to address those issues as they're arising, is to check in with the sites as much as possible on a daily basis. And I think that this year we've really tried to let people know that we are there for them, but it's very important for them to communicate what their needs are and what we're willing to give as well, so we can meet in that common space and try to have the site come alive as much as it wants to.
Right.
But if it's not ready and we're not ready, then it's not going to happen at that very moment in time, but perhaps in the future.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I think this is one of many great lessons that we've learned through the years of working with dozens and dozens and dozens of these projects, and we've actually been organizing ourselves into writing this stuff down, some of these lessons we've learned and experiences and tools that we've figured out that can be helpful. 3 years ago, City Repair published the Placemaking Guidebook. It's about a 100-page little handheld guidebook that really helps people kind of step-by-step through the process of outreaching to community members, involving people in a conversation, talking about what it actually means to build a sense of identity right where you live, and then the step-by-step of how to actually have a community consensus design and decision-making process to physically change your neighborhood, which is a pretty big step, to actually physically change something that you're just so used to having a certain way.
Right.
So the Placemaking Guidebook we wrote 3 years ago, and this year, it's very exciting, we are publishing the second edition. It will be out the first day of the VBC, a week from today. And it's new and improved. It has a lot more information about just these kind of stories that we've learned from. It has a lot more tools and pictures and activities, and a lot of emphasis placed on the nuances of what it means to work in a community project, and to really, you know, what it's like to do those steps of knocking on a neighbor's door and inviting people in a conversation and all the different kinds of things that can come out of that. So be on the lookout for the Placemaking Guidebook. It'll be available starting at the Village Building Convergence and also at City Repair. And again, you know, the way to find City Repair is our website, cityrepair.org, or the phone number, 503-235-8946, or come and visit our fabulous new headquarters. Our office is right between Mirador and the Red and Black Cafe at the Seven Corners area of Division Street, 2122 Southeast Division. Our headquarters is beautiful. You'll just come in and see, and it's a huge space. People can come and have meetings there, and it's these days it's just vibrating with activity. There's meetings, convergences happening inside there all the time. So please come by 2122 Southeast Division Street. And tonight we're having a volunteer orientation, a people power party at 6 p.m. there at the headquarters. A great way to learn what's happening and how to get involved. And on that note, I'd love to just answer the logistical question that the Village Building Convergence is May 19th through the 28th. It's 10 days long. All day long, you can go to about 25 or 30 different sites throughout the city and for free get involved, get muddy, talk with people, build these community places. There's also the second type of workshop we were talking about are, shorter afternoon workshops about specific subjects. Whether it's about creating a vision for the city of Portland or how to build a rocket stove or any number of different concepts, there's those workshops happening as well.
Didn't I see, oyster mushroom growing? Was there? There was just
Micro-remediation.
Right.
Rocket stove sounds kind of dangerous.
No, it's beautiful. There's just so many different aspects of building sustainable culture, and we're trying to address them all. And then at night, there are the evening presentations. Dinner is at 6 p.m. That's $5 if you want to come join us for dinner. And then the evening presentations from 7 until various times, sometimes really late at night, every single night at Disjecta, which is 230 East Burnside. And the evening presentations are $15, but you can also, there's a lot of volunteer positions if you want to do some work trade. The evenings are just going to be fabulous, coming together, having incredible conversations, amazing speakers, Malik Rahim, Starhawk, a whole bunch of other folks, music, community. It's really quite an experience. So again, there's daytime events, there's workshops, there's evening events. It's all on our website, cityrepair.org, and you can come tonight to learn how to volunteer.
Fabulous. All right. And Elliot, do you want to tack on to the evening events? We've talked a little bit about Malik Rahim. We've talked a little bit about Starhawk. There's music every night. What more can you tell us about the goings-on at Disjecta?
Well, gosh, one thing is Disjecta itself is a remarkable representation of some of the shifts that have happened in this year's Village Building Convergence. First of all, Disjecta is right in the middle of the city. It's you can't get any more in the middle of the city than that. It's on the Burnside Bridge.
Well, not that's, exactly.
That's pretty central.
Yeah,
pretty much. Right on.
So it's on the Burnside Bridge, and then that, of course, symbolizes the fact that this year is the first year that the Village Building Convergence has sites in all four quarters of Portland.
Which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? So yes, that's really incredible. And then, of course, Disjecta is an art organization, and so having Disjecta house the Village Building Convergence is this remarkable feat that demonstrates the creative power of what we're doing and how we're bringing that creative power into the what I'm calling the alchemy of the Village Building Convergence, where we get our chance to, we're building all through, all through the city, we're having this opportunity for communities to come together and transform the place they live into the vision of the place that they want to live, and then share that experience with each other and all coming together at night and really look at what does it mean for us to live together and be in a village at night.
Absolutely cool. I just have to say it thrills me to watch the project expand as it has. About 3-4 years ago, 3 years ago, I was working with my own neighborhood sort of visioning a site. And it was interesting to hear perspectives from folks that just didn't know what city repair was, what village building was. We're hearing these concepts for the first time, and I heard a lot of folks sort of questioning, like, it sounds like some sort of hippie preschool art project. It sounds like a bunch of, it's all fine and everything, but what's it got to do with me?
Too touchy-feely.
So this is just sort of focused in inner southeast Portland, kind of elitist, huh, you know? And I'm watching all of these things that I've heard as criticisms over the years really being rightly addressed, and I'm watching the project flourish again, in every quarter of the city now, and again with schools involved, with business and as well as residential involvement throughout the city, and not only our city, but I know Jenny, you took a little road tour, and have spread the news on the East Coast, and you know that there have been now, there's a site in New Orleans. And
there's street paintings actually in a handful of cities across the country right now. I mean, excellent. Los Angeles has a street painting. Olympia, Eugene, Duluth, Minnesota, somewhere in New Mexico.
I know someone who lives in Duluth. I'll have to write to her and tell her to go check it out. So, you know, it seems to me like I just wanted to say that for the many, many people, you know, we hear from them every week about how discouraged and depressed they are and how George Bush is ruining the world and the Republicans are, you know, we're leading, you know, going to hell with a handbasket. Yeah, and it's true. But, you know, action is the antidote to despair. And even if you're not a political person, this is the exact antithesis of everything that George Bush and the Bush crime family and their friends want for our world. So if you oppose their policies and you don't want to live in that world, the Village Building Convergence is the perfect way to undo that. And it's not a boring political meeting. It's fun. It's exciting. And it's very revolutionary.
It's an excellent way to actually embrace life.
That's right.
So we got 20 minutes left. We got the bases loaded with folks wanting to converse. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two thoughts. One was that I was really excited to hear somebody say that the convergence, you know, works for people of all different abilities because, boy, I'll tell you, a lot of community events and activism activities, you know, really leave out people with disabilities. So that was definitely very exciting. And sort of the follow-up to that is, has Convergence been doing anything to sort of generally make that known and to really focus on accommodations, everything from, you know, ASL interpreters to, you know, maybe making sure that at least this set of sites are going to be, you know, wheelchair accessible, that kind of thing. I'm just wondering what
good
kind of focus.
Those are really good questions.
Yeah, those are great questions, and I would like to answer the parts about during the day and perhaps let it switch over to Elliot for during the night. But,
sure.
Okay, and then my second thought is, has Convergence approached Dignity Village about, you know, would they like to have some sort of building constructed there?
That's a great question, and in fact, I think that's happened in ways. But,
oh, cool.
But we can hear more about that.
Right, and that's that's a great question so that all three of us can answer.
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Thank you very much.
So I think that during the day, we really encourage people to know that there's a place for everyone and that to honor those skills that we have, those inherent human qualities that we all have and that we all possess. And if you're wanting to learn something new about yourself or other people, we encourage you to expand your boundaries as much as possible and to take on only what you feel like is right for you in times in your life when you already have so many things going on. And it's okay. It's okay at whatever stage in life that you are at that any part is integral to the process because none of us can do it without one another. Mm-hmm. And dissolving those boundaries between us is part of the process and reaching out to other people who look different than you or act different and to know that those inherent qualities in them are just like you. And mm-hmm. so we really, really put that forward over and over and over again for ourselves and for other people. And in terms of working with other intentional organizations that do reach out to other people in terms of disabilities, that will happen because people have come forward to do so because they think that it's important. And it's not that it's not important. It's that it's an all-volunteer organization. So it is what we make of it. And we will encourage any kind of participation in that way. So I would love to let Elliot answer about it at the evening events and what way people can be involved.
Well, just on a practical level, DysJecta is accessible by wheelchair, and there's a ramp on each floor. So like that, so just on a practical you can enter the building at any level of ability. And as far as the levels of experience that are available at DysJecta, there's multiple environments at the venue. There's places where you can listen to the presentations. There's places where you can listen to music. There's different kinds of music available all at different times. There's a children's area. So there's lots of different experiences all available happening at the same time. So whatever your abilities are or or however you want to interact, there's room for you to interact in the way that you want to.
Are any of the speakers going to be sign interpreted?
If someone volunteers for it, there's a volunteer opportunity.
I was going to ask. There's a lot of people that do sign interpretation.
Yeah. Well, it's a fun place to do it.
And I love watching signers. It's like one of my favorite things to do. I'm just entranced by it. It's just the most beautiful thing.
Give us a call if you can be an ASL interpreter at our evening events, 235-8946.
And if you can dance to it, too, that would be great.
Yes. Is the city repair office accessible to wheelchair?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good. Excellent.
All right.
Glad to hear it.
Let's go ahead and take another caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Well, good morning. How are you?
Oh, we're doing well, LJ. How are you?
I am terrific. Thank you very, very much. I'm getting myself involved with city repair, and I just wanted the senior community to know that even old curmudgeons like us can put our 2 cents in and help out in this. I know a lot of times seniors are reluctant to get themselves involved because they think that, well, this is only for the kids. Well, no, city repair is for everybody. Mm-hmm. We are a big community. And even old folks like us have talents that we can offer and that can be utilized.
Even if all you contribute is just stories of the old times in the neighborhood, that'll entertain people while they mix the cob or whatever.
Well, folks have more to offer.
Even if that's all you can do, you know?
Well, that too. And so if any seniors listening out there, please don't be put off because everybody sounds like they're young. This is a... The good thing about living in PDX is that we're a big extended family and everybody has a voice and everybody has something to contribute.
Absolutely. Need our elders more than ever these days.
That's right.
Grandmothers and grandfathers come and be part of this. You know, we need this.
Yeah, right. I will personally say I need that. I need those older people around
to show
me the way, too. So.
Okay, and I'm going to be attending that orientation today at 6 o'clock.
Yay.
Okay, now is that going to be at 21st and Division?
Yep, yes.
Okay, groovy. I'll see you guys tonight.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, LJ.
Keep on keeping on.
503-231-8187. We've got 15 minutes left, and we're joined by all the folks in the Village Building Convergence this morning, and it just has something for everybody.
Yeah, and I also remember the last caller asked about Dignity Village, and so I just wanted to answer
that
question. That we, City Repair and Dignity Village, have a long history together. It's pretty beautiful that the villagers have come together and created, you know, a homeless people's village. And right in the center, if you haven't visited there, it's pretty phenomenal. Right in the middle of the village is the community meeting hall and the Dome of Democracy that the villagers have built, you know, out of trash, out of things they've found. And it's the most beautiful community gathering place and community decision-making place. And over the last couple of Village Building Convergences last year, Dignity Village was one of the sites.
2004.
Two years ago.
Time blur.
They all blend together.
It's true. They actually built 5 houses out there at Dignity Village out of these natural building materials, light clay straw. And, you know, in a week, in 10 days, they built 5 structures. They were, you know, like $200 each or something like that for materials. Beautiful, built by the villagers themselves. Now they have these beautiful, you know, cute little houses, and they're about 120 square feet each. And, you know, they've flower boxes, and they're just
awesome,
wonderful places. So Dignity Village has been part of the Village Building Convergence, and we hope continues to be so.
Well, I have a question. Let's suppose that I owned a vacant lot here in Portland. I wanted to build a house. Would the city allow me to build a normal size cob house on my lot?
There's definitely restrictions in terms of that, and
we're working on it.
Yeah,
good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pushing the boundaries constantly, and it depends on what zone that you're living in. There's certain height requirements, and you get encroachment permits depending on like how far back it's going to be, et cetera. And what we do, that's the integral part of the process with city repairs, that we help people along the way by going to the city and communicating that design and changing the height requirements, et cetera, and letting people know in the community that we have those skills because we've been doing it for so many years and speaking with the city. And the city is so great because they will then change certain requirements when we show them enough that we want to do these things in, in our front yards, we're like, okay, well, you know, let's change it.
So if somebody did want to build a full-sized Cobb house to live in full-time, then they could ask for VBC's assistance maybe in how to pursue that.
Mm-hmm. We're moving in that direction. You know, the more examples we have, the more familiar that city folks and engineers get familiar with the fact that Cobb is as strong as concrete and has been used for hundreds or thousands of years.
Especially
all
in
across
an earthquake
the world.
Zone.
Absolutely. You know, it's just a matter of getting familiar with it, learning, using these things to test out some of the hypotheses that, you know, that these are great building materials. And we are little by little changing. You know, we've worked with probably five different bureaus in the city. We're really building these relationships. And it takes, you know, the work of actually going and talking with the city folks, but it's also the work of people all across the city saying, yeah, let's try this out and let's push the boundaries. And that's the beautiful thing of what we can do here, especially. We have the people power of Portland. We are the example that people all over the country are looking to. Portland is the example, I think, of the most sustainable city, you know, if you can use that word. And so I think it's our duty to keep pushing those bounds and keep learning and experiencing. And one example, this year at the Village Building Convergence at Tryon Life Community Farm, we're building the city's first public composting toilets.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah.
All right, we have time is running out, and look at that, we don't have any more callers. So in that case, I can get back to asking a couple other specific questions about sites. And I guess I should let you know, if you would like to call in and join us on the air, you can call 503-231-8187.
But don't wait too long.
What's the current happenings over? I think a lot of people, especially in inner southeast Portland, are very familiar with the Sunnyside Piazza. What's happening in Sunnyside this year?
Well, the first Saturday is when most of the repaints of the intersection happens. So that first Saturday of the 20th, they're going to be repainting and closing the street down and having a block party.
So that's a week from tomorrow.
Yes.
And that's all the sites that are painted already are probably going to do that again. Sherrod and Yamhill and all
Yes.
those. Yeah.
And there also are a couple new intersection repairs happening in terms of painting that I would love for people to go check out. And they're in North Portland. So we're so excited that there are sites
Where?
In North Portland this year. There's going to be a site at Deakam and Borthwick, which is actually in North Portland.
Yes.
It's about a block away from one of the first community centers in Portland. So it's really exciting. And they're going to be painting a penguin design on the street.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, and it's kind of it looks kind of Native American inspired as well. And what's cool about it, too, is that apparently they got that penguin design because they used to house the penguins for the zoo a couple blocks away at the pool at the community center.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so there's a lot of history there.
They had
and they're
penguins at the pool at the community center?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It wasn't chlorinated or whatever they had to do. But
I'm loving that.
And there's also, I'd like to say, at 30th and Killingsworth, wow, there's so much leadership there that this is such a busy street, and they're doing everything they can to slow traffic down through artistic ways of like, hey, look here, look at all these, like, things that are reflecting off of your eyes as you're driving through.
Right.
So they're creating something to create a space for people to slow down, and they're going to be painting the sidewalks. And, whoa, this is such an example of working with the city because they're not letting them paint the street there back and forth, because it either looks like a crosswalk or it's we can't shut the street down because this is an evacuation zone or the buses go through here. And so it's like, well, what we're trying to do is something that's really long-term here.
Yes.
So they're creating a lot of kiosks and spires and things like that. So I would definitely check that out because Alberta Art Hop is happening that Saturday, and you could cruise over and see what's going on there. And there also, one last one in North Portland is at Deakam and 6th, and they're going to be painting a huge rose at the landing pad for TriMet bus station.
Right.
And they're
Excellent.
Going to be building a bench and doing all sorts of things there. So, wow, I'm so proud of people in North Portland for taking this on.
And
awesome. Next year is going to be even better because of it.
Great.
Let's go ahead and take a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hey, my question, very brief, and I'll listen to your response off. I'll hang up and listen on the air.
Uh-huh.
And that the question is, doing bioswales as an kind of an extra. Because I live on a street that's got it's a low impression, and so the water doesn't flow, and it kind of puddles. And it occurs to me that given our need for, we're spending billions on our sewage system, but is there a design possibility around integrating bioswale in parking strips to, you know, make beauty create natural habitat, give, you know, just break up the boredom and make it more interesting, but also have function around the water runoff and into these bioswales. You catch my drift?
Yes.
Good question.
Absolutely.
It does make sense what I'm proposing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see.
We've been talking about it, and I'll be listening. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if the listener heard when I talked about 90th and Burnside, but that's like the classic example of people catching water because they're noticing the patterns of water and how it's not being diverted in a correct way.
So it is something that people are actively doing on 90th and Burnside.
Absolutely.
And people can do that throughout the city and elsewhere.
Right, and the first Saturday, which is the 20th, the community members there are going to have a block party to talk about the project, and we're going to have our permaculture designer present to talk about the grant, et cetera, and I will try to be present as well to see what we can do with that site.
So I really encourage that listener to attend those things, find out how the bioswale project on 90th and Burnside is coming to be, get all kinds of the technical information about it, and then go recreate.
Yeah, and you know, while we're at it, why keep it just to the parking strips? There is so much asphalt out there that we just don't need. So what if little by little we start taking over some parking spaces and parking lots and make these into bioremediation and bioswale areas? And it's happened up on Alberta Street. I forget exactly where. There's a store owner who gave one of his parking spots in his lot to the neighborhood, and they have gotten rid of the concrete and asphalt and built it into this little, you know, parking space size park where there's a lot of plants and there's a place to sit, and it's just become a cool little pocket park.
That is awesome.
Yeah, there's a group I learned about in San Francisco this year that took, I think over one day, they converted like 30 or 40 city parking spaces, street parking, into little parks for the day. They laid down turf and put out like chairs and planted trees
that
were in pots. And they had people, as you walk by, people were encouraged to pay the meter for the parking space. So it was like people were paying for their park. And it was just an example that we can live without another parking space and look what we can create out of it.
Right.
So there's really way too much paved space in this city.
A lot of it's not being used or doesn't really need to be.
And I thoroughly encourage everyone to read Fifth Sacred Thing.
Yes.
And find out more.
The same thing, yes. Which was obviously what inspired that action in San Francisco.
I want to go ahead and see if we can squeeze one last caller in. We have only 4 minutes left, so good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I like what is going on with your guest there. I think it could be carried over to other areas. One area that would be really helpful for the people that live in this region would be to go for like a green home design where you use passive means to gather solar energy, and also part of the design of homes 100 years ago was using these eaves to prevent heat buildup in homes, which is an issue here in Portland. I mean, a lot of people suffer from the fact that the homes are built misaligned or had no passive feature like awnings, eaves, porch overhangs and things like that, which would be a natural way to keep you comfortable, save you energy, not have to plug in a machine. And then another area of this involvement could go into a three-dimensional roadway. We should actually start thinking of having underground passages for pedestrians and bicycles to get under these large streets that are, in my opinion, too dangerous to have surface-level crossings for pedestrians, cyclists, and so forth.
I kind of like the pedestrians and the cyclists staying in the sun, though. Maybe we need to do something else with the cars.
Yeah.
Well, if the energy of the cars was changed off of petroleum, you could have a smaller, lighter vehicle, and you could actually get twice as many of them on the roadway. But I still feel that the metro area is so large that it just takes too much time to drive with all of the traffic and stops and lights and delays. And if you had smaller, lighter vehicles, you wouldn't have to pour as much asphalt because they wouldn't tear up the roads as much. You could get more of them on the roadway. They'd be burning clean energy.
True enough. And we are just about out of time. Thank you very much for your call, my friend.
Or
yeah,
maybe we could just quit commuting so much to work
and localize, work at home, localize, closer, localize
a little more. Well, let me tell you real quick what's going to be coming up at 9. Don't go away, because it's the Electronic Salon with Marlena Smith, and her guests include local naturopath Dr. Stephen Bailey. They'll speak with Barbara Brenner of Breast Cancer Action, who'll be in Portland this weekend to speak about Behind the Pink Ribbon, Breast Cancer Corporations, and You. Later, she'll also play a lecture by Michael Mead on Fate and Destiny, the Two Agreements. At 11, hear Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. And so you want to stick around. Let's give the information for City Repair one more time. CityRepair.org, 503-235-8946. They're dying for volunteers. They're having a people power party tonight at 6 at 2122 Southeast Division. Be there or be rectangular.
Last thought. 1 minute left.
Love your neighbors.
Gotta like that.
Love it. It's so exciting. Just let the spirit and the energy of the Village Building Convergence take you off into new daydreams and directions and see what happens.
I mean, that's really why Village Building Convergence has come as far as it has. So let me just real quick remind you, some of the people that are going to be speaking.
On the 19th, Malik Rahim. I just cannot advocate enough. I've heard the man interviewed several times.
And then
he's an amazing speaker, and I really encourage people not to miss this chance to see Malik Rahim.
And then there's going to be Judy Bluehorse, Pramod Parajuli, Nikki Scully, Brenna Bell, and Jenny Lisi.
Hey.
Nalawala.
I know them.
We're going to have Heart of Now, Tree Bresson, Morgan Brandt, Ethan Schaffer, Starhawk, we said already, John Young, Eve Lady Apples, Brock Dolman, and G.K. Loon. And
there is, you can find out oh so much more on that website.
CityRepair.org.
We're out of time. Thanks so much for being with us. Elliot, Evelyn, and Jenny, thank you.
Thank you.
And
thank
keep
you.
On being positive and revolting.
It's 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members. And a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KBOO. Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st in Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422. Coming up next, Marlena's Electronic Salon.
Live in the studio, Monday, May 15th, on the KBOO Food Show. An interview with Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation. Tune in to hear about his new book, Chew on This, and you decide if it's too much to digest. That's 10 a.m., Monday, May 15th, on the KBOO Food Show. See you there.